Chapter 59. 2 days after, they moved Solon to another room. It was still locked, the windows covered with bars, the cedar door banded with iron. But this room had a view of Whitecliff Castle's courtyard. The courtyard was decorated in a style fit for the wedding. Greens, the color of the vines and the seas, and the purples of wine and royalty dominating.
"I don't know who you are, Pretender,"
one of Solon's guards said. He was a paunchy man with heavy jowls and haphazardly polished armor.
"But enjoy the wedding, because it's the last thing you'll ever see."
"Why is that?" Solon asked.
"Because the Mechaidon wanted his first order as emperor to be your death."
The other guard, a rail-thin man with a single eyebrow, looked nervous and guilty.
"Shut it, Ori! Nysos blood, it's gonna be a bad enough day as it is!"
To Solon, he said,
"We'll make it quick, I promise."
He exited, watching Solon for any sudden movement, and locked the door behind himself. Solon was surprised to find a tub full of water and fresh clothes in the room. He scrubbed himself and donned the clean garments, thinking. Oshobi was already giving orders to Kada's guards. That couldn't be good, but it didn't necessarily mean what Solon suspected. Solon had never learned how much power Kada intended to share once she married. When she talked with him 2 days ago, she hadn't seemed desperate enough to grant Oshobi total power. It made him feel sick. For the last 2 days, he'd thought through every option he had, and he couldn't find anything that would assert his own rights without undermining Kada's. He didn't know what any of the political undercurrents were, so anything he did could have the opposite of the intended effect. But the clean clothes laid out for him, clothing fit for a noble, if not quite royalty, told him that Kada most likely hadn't intended him to die today. Was this his chance? Or was she pushing him by forcing him to watch a wedding that she saw as his fault? Outside, the nobles were gathering in order of precedence, standing as Sethi always stood to witness a wedding. Soon, at least 400 of them surrounded the platform where the Empress and Emperor-to-be would be wed. Solon could pick out many faces he recognized, and saw a frightening number of absences, too. Had his brother killed so many? How had Sejuron become such a monster without Solon knowing? The ring of the singing swords announced the beginning of the ceremony. On the platform, the dancers faced each other. Each wore a mask, the man the suitor's mask, which today was deadly serious. A pubescent boy wore the woman's mask, today lovely, but austere, in keeping with the Empress's dignity. Each held a specially shaped, hollow sword that would sing in the dance, tones varied by the dancer's grip and where each struck the other. The swords were pitched at octaves, and the duel, symbolic of the couple's courtship, was always partly choreographed and partly extemporaneous. It was a perennial favorite, and skilled dancers were the most expensive part of a wedding. The dances, proclaimed sacred to Nysos, ranged from the erotic to the comedic. It was also usually the most anxiety-provoking time of a wedding for the couple. Dancers being the artists they were, there was no guaranteeing they wouldn't make the man or woman or both look like fools, and the sword dance was often the only thing remembered about the wedding. The dancers bowed low, but kept their eyes up, as if suspicious of each other. And then they began. For a time as they danced, Solon forgot that he was in a prison. They gave the boy a quick hand for Kada's quick tongue, and a wide range. The woman, known as a scold, might be given a single note for an entire dance, while an excitable man might be given only notes at the extremes of the singing sword. The man playing Oshobi was a huge presence, forceful and manly and, if slower, also stronger than Kada. Whoever they were, these dancers were incorruptible, unafraid of even a man who would be emperor. In their dance, Solon read the courtship perfectly. Oshobi had always pursued with a single-minded determination. Kada weakened early, then rallied for years. Always, Oshobi pursued, and the dancer gave a lightly mocking tone to it that only a skilled eye would have seen. There was the suggestion that Oshobi wanted not Kada, but that which was behind her, missing opportunities at the woman as he aimed at the throne. Kada slowly tired, but the dancers underplayed it, not suggesting that Oshobi beat her into submission, but simply allowing her to slow to his level and make him look more brilliant as he matched and overmatched her, cadences singing together until Oshobi took up Kada's line. As the dance wound to a close, Kada bowed to her knees and spread her arms to take the ceremonial touch over the heart. In apparent haste, the dancer playing Oshobi stepped forward too quickly and slipped. His sword tapped her throat for the barest instant before he righted himself and touched it to her heart. It was so well done that even Solon believed for a moment that the dancer really had slipped. Everyone took it as that, or decided to take it as that, a slight error in an otherwise flawless performance. They cheered wildly, and once the cheering stopped, the betrothed entered. Solon's heart leapt to his throat as Kada strode forward. She wore a purple samite cape with a long train edged in lace. A crown of vines with ripe purple grapes was woven through her long black hair. It being her wedding, both of her breasts were bare, the nipples rouged, and beneath her navel her bare stomach was adorned with ancient fertility runes. A cloth of gold skirt hung low on her hips, trailing slightly behind her, her wine-stained bare feet barely winking out. Most women exposed more of their ankles, saying the juice of the grape is clothing enough for a wedding. Apparently, Kada really did believe that a queen was a queen first, and a woman sometime later. But after a decade and a half in Midcryu, the modesty was lost on Solon. The sight of her here, like this, filled him with every sort of longing. The skirt had neither buttons, nor clasps, nor ties, nor underclothes beneath it. It was finished the morning of the wedding with the woman inside it. It was to be torn off by the groom in his passion. Revelers outside the wedding chamber would call loudly until the groom threw it out the window. In ancient times, and in some rural areas still, the skirt was always white and ripped open, but not removed until the wedding was consummated. Then the revelers would parade with the proof of the woman's virginity, which, as often as not, was sheep's blood. Most mothers provided their daughters with a vial of it, in case she had broken her hymen licitly or illicitly. It was a tradition Solon was glad had mostly disappeared, not only because he thought it was gross, but also because he found it hard to imagine enjoying consummating his marriage with drunken screaming assholes pounding on the walls. In the courtyard, Oshobi Takeda walked forward. Solon felt a stab of hatred. He should be walking forward now. He should be the one who tore Kada's skirt tonight. Oshobi Takeda came into the circle, bare-chested as well, runes of vigor and potency painted on the surface of a stomach so muscular and devoid of fat that it wasn't flat, but ridged. He too wore vines through his hair and a simple green cape, paired with cloth of gold trousers that ended just below the knee. Oshobi mounted the platform, barely looking at Kada. Solon thought he must be either blind or homosexual to disregard such beauty. He turned and addressed the assembled nobles.
I came here today to marry our empress. It was in my heart to unite this land, as it hasn't been united for more than a decade. I know all of us were dismayed when we heard of Daun Wariamo's infidelities, and though it strained my family's honor, I came here determined to wed.
From his position, Solon could see what the nobles below could not. At every exit, armored city guards had lined up, and with them, in irregular ranks, stood many of the royal guards. The strength was, so far, hidden, but they could move in on the assembled nobles in moments. What Solon couldn't see was how Kada was taking this prologue to treason. He didn't have to wait long. Kada strode up onto the platform directly to Oshobi and slapped his face.
If you speak treason, Oshobi Takeda, I will have your head,
Kada said in a clear, fearless voice. An older noble Solon recognized as Nori Oshibatu, long a friend of the Wariamos, shot a look at Oshobi and stepped forward.
My dear Kada, our beloved empress, you sound hysterical. This is not befitting. Please, he only speaks.
Nori pulled Kada back into the crowd, where several other family friends closed around her. Oshobi smiled, like the big cat he was.
I came here to serve Seth, but this very morning I discovered something my honor could not countenance. Dwayne Wariamo had on her person letters from the late emperor's brother Solon to Kada. In these letters, he spoke of his trysts with her in the castle and of a secret marriage.
You lie!
Kada shrieked. Solon's heart sank. The trysts in the castle had only been attempted trysts, culminating in the disaster of her mother coming in on them naked and beating Solon with a shoe. It would have been worth it if she'd come in 10 minutes later or, well, he'd been a young man, maybe 2 minutes later. The marriage, of course, was a total fiction. But Oshobi was quick.
I have the letters here,
he said, brandishing a sheaf.
And this woman was with Lady Wariamo when she came upon you fornicating in the castle.
A slave woman was thrust forward.
I do so swear,
she said in a tiny voice.
Louder!
Oshobi demanded.
I swear it's true.
The nobles were in the predictable uproar. But Oshobi was wise enough that he didn't call his men forward. Kada was screaming. But someone put a hand over her mouth, and numerous men were restraining her.
So you see, even if we believe that Kada wasn't incestuous in her sluttish trysts in our nation's very heart, we know that she married Sejuron Tofusen, a marriage null and void because she was already married to the Emperor's brother.
Oshobi painted a sad look on his face.
I woke this morning, willing to dishonor my family because I wanted to do what was right for our country.
Behind Solon, the door creaked open. He turned away from the courtyard to see his two guards enter.
All right,
the paunchy one said.
We already let you see more of the show than we were supposed to. You can figure how it turns out from here. You ready?
Yes,
Solon said. He drew in his talent.
Which of you would like to die first?
Huh? They asked in union.
Together, then,
he said, and stilled their hearts with his talent. The guards collapsed, one crumpling, the other falling full on his face. Solon took a sword and faced the barred window. With a concussion that rocked the castle, Solon blew out the entire wall, Stones rained on the crowd 50 paces away. Everyone ducked and turned to see what had happened, and Dorian always said I wasn't subtle. Solon jumped down lightly and strode toward the crowd. A guard stepped in his path, wide-eyed and gulping. Solon gestured as if shooting a fly, and a wall of air flipped the guard aside.
I am Solonariwan Tophusen, son of Emperor Croesus Tophusen, Light of the West, Protector of the Isles, and High Admiral of the Royal Fleets of Seth.
It was a deliberately ambiguous construction, whether he was listing his father's titles or claiming them for himself.
I have come home, and I call you a traitor and a liar, Oshobi. And even if your despicable lies were true, you have no claim to this throne while I live.
We can remedy that,
Oshobi snarled. Solon advanced quickly onto the platform, not giving Oshobi time to think.
You would duel me?
Solon asked. He laughed scornfully.
A Tophusen does not dirty his hands with the blood of a dog.
Oshobi roared, drew his sword, and hacked at Solon with all his considerable strength. Solon deflected it. His counterstroke cut halfway into Oshobi's neck. Oshobi's eyes went big, but he tried to complete one more slash while Solon's sword was stuck. A silver of magic enervated Oshobi's fingers. The sword dropped.
However, Solon said, I'll make an exception for a little cat.
He ripped the sword out of Oshobi's neck, and blood sprayed over the platform as the big man dropped onto his face. Solon put his foot on the neck of his dying foe and pointed the sword at the nobles holding Kaeda.
That's your empress, Solon said. I'd advise you to take your hands off her.